which are new and about which late Imam Khomeini does not have an answer, he should turn to a living mujtahid,
mm-hmm.
who is the most knowledgeable of all the jurists.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, what is the rule, Sheikh Javid, what is the Sharia rule in continuing to follow a deceased mujtahid if he is the most knowledgeable, if he is the most learned mujtahid?
Well, you know, continuing to follow a deceased mujtahid is not mandatory, even if he is the most learned mujtahid, because he's no longer alive, and there are traditions, there are riwayat, which say, okay, one should follow the living mujtahid, because he's in touch with him, he can communicate with him, and so he is there.
Mm-hmm.
If there is any question, he can ask him. So that could be the rationale, or maybe the concept beyond why, the reason why we should follow a living mujtahid. It is not, according to his opinion, it's not mandatory to keep following a deceased mujtahid.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, if a person wants to follow, it's okay, it's permissible. And if that mujtahid is remains to be the most learned mujtahid, His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei says that one should not skip ihtiyat or precaution to stay in his taqlid.
Yes.
It's okay, it's good, and it's of course more precautionary to stay in his taqlid and keep following him.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break and we'll be back and we come after the break and continue our program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Just stay with us.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about the rules of taqlid based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, is the most learned mujtahid's permission necessary in continuing our taqlid of a deceased marja? Or is it enough to have the permission of any scholar, any mujtahid?
Well, basically, it is necessary to have the permission of the most knowledgeable mujtahid who is alive to get his permission to obtain his ijaza to follow the deceased mujtahid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if let's say if the scholars are unanimous in their views and their opinions about the permissibility of continuing with the taqlid of a deceased mujtahid, then it's not necessary, it's not obligatory to get the permission of the most knowledgeable one.
Yes.
So he can refer to any mujtahid to obtain his ijazah, because they are all agreed and they are unanimous about the permissibility of continuing with the taqlid of a deceased mujtahid.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay. Somebody, Sheikh Javid, used to follow the late Imam Khomeini, and then he changed with respect to certain issues, certain matters of taqlid to another mujtahid after the Imam passed away. After a while, the second marja also died, passed away. What is this person's duty now?
Well, it is permissible for him, you know, as before, to continue following the late Imam regarding those issues in which he is still acting according to his views. And as for the issues in which he changed to the second marja, to the second mujtahid, he has the freedom and the liberty to either continue to follow him or to change to a living mujtahid. So he still can choose, and there is no doubt about it that he can remain in taqlid of the second mujtahid as well, but he can also refer to another living mujtahid. So this is not a big deal. Of course, always permissible to stay in taqlid of the mujtahid who is supposed to be the most learned of all the jurists. But if he wishes to change to another mujtahid, he can do it so at any moment or at any time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sheikh Javid, you know, somebody said that after Imam Khomeini passed away, I thought that it was not permissible, in fact, in, you know, accordance with his fatwa, to continue with following a deceased marja. And therefore, he said, I chose a living marja for taqlid. Is it now permissible to return to the taqlid of the late Imam Khomeini?
Okay. Well, we should differentiate between those fatawa which he acted upon in accordance with the opinion of late Imam Khomeini and those acts of worship which he did not act, you know. For example, let's discuss, I give the example of citing the moon, the month of Ramadan, and establishing the beginning of the month of Ramadan.
Yes.
This duty-bound person acted according to Imam Khomeini's fatwa in regards to sighting the moon with or without binoculars, you know. So he acted according to his opinion, and now he wishes to go back to the same fatwa and follow, act according to his fatwa. Of course, His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khomeini says that it is permissible to act according to those fatwas which he acted upon when he was following Imam Khomeini. But when it comes to those issues which he never acted upon as a muqallid of Imam Khomeini, let's say, and he wants now to begin acting, then he cannot refer to Imam Khomeini or cannot follow him. He should look for a living mujtahid to follow. And it's not permissible to initiate or to start doing taqlid in those areas following a mujtahid who is not alive. He should look for a living mujtahid to see what his fatwas or his opinions are. Of course, when it comes to in the event that the deceased mujtahid and the living mujtahid have the same opinion, it does not make any difference whether you follow that mujtahid or this mujtahid,
yes,
because the result and the outcome is the same,
mm-hmm,
and you are not doing anything against any of the fatwa, mm-hmm, of any other of the mujtahids.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. And thank you very much, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. We bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
in the limelight.
Methane is a potent greenhouse gas and the second biggest driver of global warming. A new study shows that only 13% of methane emissions are actually regulated. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote in this regard, methane, a potent greenhouse gas and the second biggest driver of global warming after carbon dioxide, had its moment in the spotlight in 2021. Over 100 countries signed to Global Methane Pledge to cut emissions by 30% compared to 2020 levels by 2030. This is a useful goal, but the new research shows that something is still missing: stringent policies to eliminate methane emissions. The study is the first global review of methane policies, which have been adopted across the world since the 1970s. It reveals that only around 13% of man-made methane emissions from the biggest sources, including agriculture, energy, and waste, is regulated by policies capable of controlling and preventing them. This falls to 10% if we take a conservative view of the total emissions and regions covered by specific policies and whether they have been fully or partially implemented. These policies may mandate companies to find and fix methane leaks, install equipment which can capture emissions, charge them for every unit of methane released, or reward them for making use of methane, like extracting biogas from rotting food and other organic waste. The study showed that the majority of policies, about 70%, have been adopted. Methane is over 80 times more powerful in trapping heat in Earth's atmosphere than CO2, but lasts for a much shorter time. Since methane in the air breaks down within about a decade compared to centuries for CO2, phasing out emissions could rapidly reduce the rate at which the planet is heating. For any hope of meeting global climate targets, deep methane reductions are needed immediately. The research shows that countries which have committed to deep cuts must now expand and strengthen policies for eliminating their emissions. The remaining countries should step up their efforts on methane too. Scientists systematically examined policies which have been introduced in 79 countries to reduce methane emissions across farming, solid and liquid waste management, and the energy sectors, including the extraction, transportation and consumption of fossil fuels, coal, oil and gas. Motivations for regulating methane varied. Not only does the gas contribute to climate change, but it can also generate tropospheric ozone, a harmful air pollutant. Methane is also a safety hazard if its concentration in the air reaches an explosive range. But if it is captured, methane becomes a source of energy as a major component of natural gas. And so regulating methane, for example, by incentivizing the capture of methane from coal beds can be cheap and useful. How effective such policies have been is far from clear, though, as countries do not tend to quantify their emissions using direct measurements. Regulations are more frequently used to address fossil, including oil, gas, and coal, rather than biogenic, including livestock, solid, and liquid waste sources of methane. In fact, 41% of all policies targeted methane from coal mines and oil refineries, compared with 25% for farms and landfills. Taxes and charges on the quantities of waste, for example, are more common for regulating biogenic sources, whereas financial incentives, like feed-in tariffs for electricity generated from captured coal mine methane, are more frequently used in fossil methane policies. Policies targeting methane emissions from the oil and gas sector tend to be more stringent than those targeting coal mines. Similarly, policies targeting methane emissions from solid and liquid waste are more stringent than those addressing livestock emissions. These divergent approaches to regulating different methane sources may be the result of opposition from the fossil fuel and agricultural industries. The relative importance of these industries to national and regional economies and energy and food supply may also explain why government regulation has so far proved inadequate. More stringent policies and a consistent approach for quantifying how much methane is being emitted from each source will be key to bringing regulation in line with global commitments. Improving the monitoring of methane emissions is particularly important for enabling deeper cuts. Historically, methane emissions have been difficult and costly to measure, partly because it is an invisible gas and compared to CO2, only minor emissions cause substantial warming. However, methane reduction is still often perceived by policymakers as a choice rather than a necessary complement to ongoing decarbonization efforts focused on CO2. Within almost every sector, there are major methane sources that have been largely overlooked. These include the digestive gases of cows and other livestock, methane from the ventilation shafts of coal mines, high-emitting sources in the oil and gas sector, and from abandoned mines and oil and gas wells. In the energy sector, emissions from non-operated joint ventures are particularly neglected by regulation. This is a type of business structure where a company owns an equity interest without assuming day-to-day operational control. These are usually owned by major oil and gas companies, but operated by local partners. National oil and gas firms in developing countries are a prime example. Supply chains are another important source, particularly with internationally traded commodities like liquefied natural gas, LNG, and cooking coal used in steelmaking. In the oil and gas sector, where methane may be more cost-effective to reduce because the captured gas could be monetized, global commitments like the Paris Agreement require the industry's own emissions to fall alongside falling demand for fossil fuels across all economies.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. السلام عليكم respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions in Practical Tajweed Rules, held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. So I really, really welcome you all, and also our brothers here, Brother Ali Nasir and Hussein Ruhullah, Hassan Nasrullah and Fawad Haider. So without wasting the time, today we'll talk about Ayah 121 and the next Ayah 122 in Surah Ali Imran on page 65.
So and 66.
And page 66. Yeah, on the top of page 66. So, everybody, let's once listen to the recitation.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ غَدَوْتَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ تُبَوِّئُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ مَقَاعِدَ لِلْقِتَالِ وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ إِذْ هَمَّ الطَّائِفَتَانِ مِنْكُمْ أَنْ تَفْشَلَا وَاللَّهُ وَلِيُّهُمَا وَعَلَى اللَّهِ فَلْيَتَوَكَّلِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ.
That was nice recitation. Alhamdulillah. So, don't worry, okay? You will be reciting the same, inshallah. Even you might recite better, okay? Practice. And brothers and sisters, stay with us till the end of this session, inshallah. We'll practice the recitation at the end, okay? After mentioning the important tajweed rule. So, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. Allah Almighty, in Ayah 121 in Surah Ali Imran, says, وَإِذْ غَدَوْتَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ تُبَوِّئُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ مَقَاعِدَ لِلْقِتَالِ وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ. In the next ayah, إِذْ هَمَّتْ طَائِفَتَانِ مِنْكُمْ أَنْ تَفْشَلَا وَاللَّهُ وَلِيُّهُمَا وَعَلَى اللَّهِ فَلْيَتَوَكَّلِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ. So I will mention some important points, okay? In these two verses, ayatain, then inshallah we'll move on to the tajweed rules. First, listen to the translation. وَإِذْ غَدَوْتَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ. O Prophet, when you left your family at dawn, early in the morning, تُبَوِّئُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ, to settle the faithful in their positions for battle, okay? لِلْمَقَاعِدَ لِلْقِتَالِ, to deploy them on their certain positions. It talks about the battle of Uhud after the battle of Badr, okay? The battle of Uhud, where unfortunately the Muslims were defeated because of like some Muslims, okay? When Prophet ﷺ deployed them, okay? Had given them instructions, settled them on certain positions. Okay, some of them on the top of mountains, they have to,
arrows.
Archers. So Prophet ﷺ had settled some archers, okay, on the mountain, okay, and told them never back down, never go for what? For the money, for their, for example, swords, the enemies, okay? Stay there, okay, firm, okay? You have to protect all the Muslims down the mountain, okay? But unfortunately, they left their position and yeah, the Muslims were defeated, okay? And Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam had warned them early. So Allah says, وَإِذْ غَدَوْتَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ, when you left your family at dawn to settle the faithful in their positions for battle, وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ, and Allah is all-hearing, all-knowing. And in the next ayah, when إِذْ هَمَّ طَائِفَتَانِ مِنْكُمْ, when two groups among you were about to lose courage, to lose their confidence. وَاللَّهُ عَلِيهُمَا, though Allah is their guardian, وَعَلَى اللَّهِ فَلْيَتَوَكَّلِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ, and in Allah let all the faithful put their trust. So, some messages from these two verses. First, we all have to listen to our prophet, to the leader. The victory, okay, the victory can come to you when you listen to your leader, when you follow your leader. Alright? If Muslim community, if they listened at that time in Battle of Uhud, in the Battle of Badr, okay, they listened to the Prophet, they won the fight, okay, the battle, okay, they were victorious, okay, they defeated their enemies. In the Battle of Uhud, unfortunately, they didn't listen for money, for wealth, these things, they ran away, okay, they left their positions, so they were defeated, okay. So in all areas of life, if you follow the instructions of somebody who is older than you, somebody who is more knowledgeable than you, not even your leader, okay, somebody who is more knowledgeable than you, your parents, your friends, your teachers, sometimes they give you instructions about many things, your studies, your timetable management, about the energy that you have nowadays, okay, you're so active. So about any instructions they give you, okay, do not think like they don't want you to have your fun, okay, they want you, but they are older than you. They have experienced, okay? They were the same age as you, okay? They have experienced what you have done, what you are going to do, okay? They have experienced all these things. First and foremost, I tell myself, okay? So then to you. So we have to listen to the instructions. If we want to get good results, listen to the instructions. Your leaders, if your leader says do this, you should do that. If Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says do this, we have to do that. Okay, in the early Islam, when Prophet was coming back from a battle, okay, in near Mecca or Medina, they were okay. So Prophet said that break your fasts, okay, to the Muslims. Prophet himself broke his fast, okay, because they were on a trip, okay, and told the Muslims, okay, break your fast. But some Muslims did not break their fast. They said, no, we'll not break our fasts. We should fast. They didn't listen to the Prophet, okay. So we should listen to the Prophet, to the leader, to the Imam. That's the first message we can understand from this. Wallahu sami'un alim. Allah knows. Allah is all hearing, all knowing. Even if you don't listen, Allah knows this. Okay? And yeah. In the next ayah, there is one more message. إِذْ هَمَّ طَائِفَتَانِ مِنْكُمْ. Sometimes, maybe, nowadays as well, we are in a battle with our enemies. So maybe a lot of Muslims will back down. Okay? Will lose their courage. They say, oh God, we cannot fight the enemies. They are so strong. Right? What should we do? Give them courage. Encourage them. Give them energy. That's it. وَعَلَى اللَّهِ فَلْيَتَوَكَّلِ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ. We all have to put our trust in Allah Almighty. Okay? Relying on God.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا ورسول الله معلمنا هذا
القرآن. Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
So inshallah, for more messages, explanations, I'm sure you have to refer to the Tafsir books and you will find inshallah a lot of things, okay? That's it from these two verses. Now we'll mention the Tajweed rules, then inshallah we'll move on to the recitation. Wa'idh غَدَوْتَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ. Hussein, what do you think? The pronunciation of the letters? Huh? Which letters are important?
Yes. ذَال and غَيْن.
غَيْن, وَاوَ as well.
Yeah.
E, Hamza as well.
Hamza.
مِنْ أَهْلِكَ.
Ha, Hamza.
Soft one. Good. Tubawwi'u.
Again, Hamza.
Hamza. Al-mu'minina.
Again, Hamza.
Maqa'ida.
Ayn and Qaf.
Good job. Fawad, continue. Lil-qitali. Wallahu.
Qaf and Lam.
Good job. Wallahu. Ha. Ha. These are important. Sami'un. Huh?
Ayn.
Alim. Again, Ayn. In the next ayah. Idh hammat. Ha and that. Good job. Hassan. Ta'ifatani.
Wow.
Ta. Good job. Minkum an tafshala wallahu. Ali Nasir. Wallahu waliyuhuma. The letter ha, right?
Yeah, ha.
Wa ala Allahi falyatawakkal mu'minun. Ayn, ha, and hamza. So, these are in terms of letters, okay? Pronounce them correctly. Pay attention. Now, wa idh gha. Gha has a heavy sound. This is an important point. Wa idh ghadawta nu. Wa idh gha. Ghadawta. Min ahlik. Nun sakin plus hamza. Idhar. Clearly read the nun. No changes. Min ahlika. Tubawwi'ul. You see that ya? Tubawwi'u? Ya.
Yes.
So ya is just a base for hamza. So you don't have to read it. You tubawwi'ul. Yul, okay? Tubawwi'ul. It's difficult, yes? So it's not tubawwi'ul. Tubawwi'ul. Ya is just a base.
Yes.
As we said, hamza comes with alif, on the top of alif, on the top, on the bottom of alif, on the top of ya, on the top of waw. So these letters are just bases for hamza. We have to pronounce the hamza. Mu'minina. Look, mu'minina. Waw, on the top of waw, you have hamza. Waw is just a base. Maqa'ida. Qaf has a heavy sound. Qa'ida. Lil qital. Qila tells you?
Better to stop.
Stopping expert. Good job. Better to stop, but you still can continue. Wallahu. Waw has a fatha. The letter lam in the word Allah will be pronounced heavily. Since we have a fatha sound before. Wallahu sami'un alim. Tanween plus ayn ayn. Matches
throat letters.
Good job. The rule idhar is applied. Wallahu sami'un alim. That's it from this for this ayah. If hammat mi mushaddad, stretch it for two counts. Hammat ta. Aha, look, look.
Here was your rule.
Ah, ta plus ta. Do you see ta ta? So these are identical letters, kind of the same letters, similar letters. So you skip
the first.
Ah, you merge them actually. Idgham. Idhammat. It means you don't read the ta, instead you double the ta. Hammatta'ifatani. Ta has a heavy sound. The mad is also wajib. You should stretch it for 5-6 counts. Minkum. Minkum. Nun sakin kaf. Ikhfa. Hide the sound of nun. Minkum. Antafshala. Again, antafshala.
Ikhfa.
Hide the sound of nun. Wallahu waliyuhuma. Pronounce the word Allah as with a full mouth. Wallahu waliyuhuma. Qila, as Hassan said, it's better to stop, but you still can continue. Wa'ala Allahi fal yatawakkalil mu'minun. There is no other important point. So, 1 minute to finish. We'll practice, inshallah, the recitation. Ready?
Yes.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
وإذ غدوت من أهلك تبوئ المؤمنين مقاعد للقتال
وَإِذْ غَدَوْتَ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ تُبَوِّئُ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ مَقَاعِدَ لِلْقِتَالِ
وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ
وَاللَّهُ سَمِيعٌ عَلِيمٌ
إِذْ هَمَّتْ طائفتان منكم أن تفشلا والله وليهما
إذ همت طائفتان منكم أن تفشلا والله وليهما
وعلى الله فليتوكل المؤمنون
وعلى الله فليتوكل المؤمنون
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
أحسنتم ما شاء الله That's from us for today And thank you so much for being with us, brothers and sisters. Thank you so much for joining us. Inshallah, we really recommend you stay with IRB English Radio every day, inshallah, with the Quranic session. We are at your services. Fawad Hassan Hussein Ali Nasir, thank you so much. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
Palestinian children.
Part 2.
Four of those eight kids were basically vaporized when the bombs hit. Their young bodies could not be identified or even found amongst the debris left behind. The other four dispersed in different directions, not knowing the fate of each other, as more bombs actually followed them. Ambulances and journalists came, but it was all over.
Badly wounded, I crawled until I reached help. Someone laid me on the ground and left to bring an ambulance. They wrapped my head in a bandage and laid me down. I was in a coma, so at the time, I didn't know who was killed and who was still alive.
They laid Montasim by a wall, thinking he was dead. Hamas fainted. Yunus sat next to his brother, and I was weeping over my brother and cousins.
This other boy was with them. He came over yelling, Mama, Mama. I said to him, What's the matter? He said, Muhammad was martyred. I said, How come Muhammad was martyred? Are you sure? You must be lying because Muhammad was here just now. He said that Muhammad was killed. I said he wasn't. But then I saw it air on TV, children killed on the beach. The girls cried. He was our son of 20 years. We cry over you every day, son. You are never out of our thoughts.
Each day since the day Ismail was martyred, I have gone to the beach to spot where he was killed, and I've searched for his remains, hoping the sea had washed them up. I remembered that day vividly. When I reached the hospital, I realized what I had witnessed, a massacre against humanity. Where is the humanity? Ismail's senseless murder has forever taken the smile and joy from my home.
زكريا وعاهد ومنتصر هذا الجريح.
زكريا, عاهد and متسم, who was injured but thought to be dead. إسماعيل and all of our kids were dead. I would not wish this on anyone. Everyone saw us on TVs and internet. What can I possibly say? I say occupation took my first grandson, who called me grandma.
The survivors of that tragic day come back to the beach, not to play as they did before, but to sit, to remember, vainly searching for a rational reason to an irrational act. It was a blatant war crime, which claimed the lives of their four relatives, with no one thus far held accountable. Meanwhile, they suffer from physical injuries themselves and the psychological trauma of it all.
Life without them is meaningless and full of despair. I'm not saying that because they are my brothers, but for the sake of all Palestinians, all of children. If I was flying a jet and I saw Jewish children playing, I wouldn't target them because they are just children playing. They could see from after that we were children.
They could tell we were a bunch of kids playing. They deliberately target and kill the children of Gaza and Palestine. They want to uproot them at a young age so they won't grow up and become resistors. So they bomb them at this young age.
Incredibly, shockingly, the targeting of Palestinian children escalated and peaked on the day of Eid al-Fitr, when the children of Gaza came out to play, to lighten up, relax, and have some fun to celebrate the last day of Eid, thinking that the Israeli army would not dare to violate such a holy occasion. Israel unmercifully sent missiles down, turning their brief period of joy to incomprehensible grief.
We live in Al-Ahrar Street at the beach camp, a major street in the camp area. We awoke on the day of Eid to enjoy it like everyone else normally does. The children were playing in the street, some were playing on the swings. All of a sudden, a missile landed on top of us. It was around 3 p.m. We were surprised by the explosion, but when we turned around, we saw the children had become shreds of flesh laying in the street. Some were injured and some others were dead.
I was playing on the swings when the missile landed. I got hit with shrapnel here. Some people were killed. My uncle Shaban, Jamal, and Muhammad were among those who died. I remember we were happy and playing on the day of Eid. Who could be so wicked as to bomb us on such a holy day? The children were out playing and rejoicing. And then the missile came, and in a second they were dead. Shaban had been blown apart. Others who died were Muhammad al-Halu, the Barid family's son, Muhammad Miqdad, and Muhammad Washah.
Muhammad Miqdad, Muhammad Washah.
كان في كثير شهداء مرميين.
There were many martyrs, some scattered around on the ground, inside buildings, in trees, everywhere. The injured and the dead. Ambulances and cars swarmed on the location, and people were crying out in anguish for the loss of their children. 13 martyrs and 40 to 50 injuries. I sustained injuries to my leg here. And in my chest here.
ورحنا على المستشفى.
ابني كان يلعب ورا السيارة كان جنبي يعني تقريبا.
My son was playing behind the car. He was almost next to me, but he died due to bleeding caused by a shrapnel penetrating his body. When the missile first landed, I was still conscious, receiving wounds to my stomach, legs, and arms. My leg disabled and my arm was broken and behind my back. I wore a white top which was covered in blood. I looked around just before I fainted to see the extent of the brutality and carnage. The scene was horrific, their actions so brutal.
Martyrs came from several refugee families at the beach camp on the first day of Eid after being targeted by an Israeli bombing campaign. On the third day of Eid, missiles of the Israeli occupation forces targeted some little kids who were playing with their grandfather with some simple new toys they had received for Eid on the roof of their home.
A truce was declared on television on the third day of Eid. We went up on the roof with all the little children. They wanted to play because it was a time of truce. They were not allowed to go out in the street because we worried about their safety.
After 30 to 45 minutes of afternoon prayer, we heard more explosions. There was a first, second, and third explosion. It took some minutes to work out what had happened. Our house was filled with heavy smoke, and we realized that it was actually our house that had been bombed by an Israeli airstrike.
We rushed to the roof only to see the most horrifying scene. All that remained of the elderly man and the seven children that were playing were pieces of flesh and bone. At least three had their heads blown off. I looked over the martyred children. Two of my daughters were among the victims. One had survived. She had a hole in the back of her skull. Another girl was also alive, but couldn't talk. I called her and she looked up at me, so I rushed them to the hospital.
I searched around to collect my children. First I took Abd al-Halim, then I went back inside and got Abd al-Aziz. His head had been split open. I couldn't remove my third daughter. I couldn't find her head. Then I came downstairs and stood here at the doorstep. They took away the bodies of the martyrs in ambulances. I wanted to see whether they took the body of my daughter or not. I found my niece Malik, the daughter of Jalal. I kissed her forehead and I was about to leave with the ambulance. As I was stepping out of the ambulance, a rocket from an unmanned drone hit us. My leg was hit and had to be amputated. This finger and my arm were injured too. It was a cruel airstrike. In all, there were 10 martyrs from my family, including seven children, my parents, my brother and his daughter, and my cousin who was carrying the bodies of martyrs at the time he was hit.
After the disproportionate aggression on the population of Gaza, there are still survivors today who suffer heightened psychological effects, reflected clearly in their behavior, which is especially telling during play activities such as painting that express the evil acts that Israel perpetrated against them.
Usually after the therapy process and even after recovery, there will still be some trauma symptoms among the affected children, with most of them on edge, in high alert mode, expecting more attacks on them. That's why you find that whenever a child is playing or drawing, the played-out theme tends to represent the incident, which is causing the alerted state from their memories, from their nightmares. When we spoke to children aged around 12 who survived the last three wars, who witnessed and suffered trauma from the 2008 Israeli-imposed war and this one in 2014, after recovering from each war and after being treated, they still believe that there would be another war and another. Three wars lived through by a child. The trauma is unimaginable, and the child is left in a state of constant alertness. We can't even tell them that they are safe, that there will be no more wars, or that everything is now fine.
Even if we ourselves, we can't say that there is no war.
Whenever they unleash a war on us, we will resist and defeat them.
It is beyond any reasonable doubt that targeting children of Palestine is part of the culture and a systematic issue of the Israeli occupation army, which seeks to brand the conscious mind of all Palestinian children with the ideology that they are all the undeserved, the subhuman, that there can be no Palestinian flag, no independence, no resistance.
In the limelight.
A new poll has found that the U.S. media is disconnected from the American public. The poll suggested that Americans don't believe narratives on Russiagate or that the Biden family was not engaged in corruption. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, most Americans believe the Russiagate investigation of Donald Trump was based on lies and that President Joe Biden's family engaged in influence-peddling crimes, a new Harvard CAPS Harris poll has shown, suggesting that legacy media outlets have failed to sway public opinion. The poll released recently found that 56% of U.S. voters believe the claim that Trump colluded with Russia to win the 2016 presidential election was a false story. The same percentage believed the Steele dossier, which was the basis for an FBI investigation of Trump's campaign, was false. Nearly 7 in 10 respondents said they weren't surprised that the Durham report released earlier this month found that the FBI violated its own standards in starting the Trump-Russia investigation and became a funnel for disinformation from Democrat candidate Hillary Clinton's campaign. Likewise, 70% of respondents were concerned about interference by the FBI and intelligence agencies in U.S. presidential elections, and 71% believe the federal government needs wide-ranging reform to prevent such meddling. CNN and other U.S. media outlets hyped the Trump-Russia collusion allegations for 3 years and downplayed last week's release of the Durham report, calling the special prosecutor's findings about the FBI a whole big nothing. Just before voters went to the polls in 2020, media outlets amplified claims by former U.S. intelligence officials that a bombshell report on alleged influence peddling by Biden's family sourced to a laptop computer that Biden's son, Hunter Biden, had abandoned at a repair shop was based on disinformation. Further, 63% of respondents believe Hunter Biden engaged in illegal influence peddling and tax evasion, while 53% think Joe Biden was involved while he was vice president. Most, about 55%, also believe that the FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice aren't really investigating the Biden family's corruption, and 59% think the disinformation claim was false. Independent journalist Glenn Greenwald said the poll illustrated how radically out of touch liberal corporate media was with the views of Americans. He added that major media outlets were not only pushing narratives that Americans didn't believe, but also didn't permit the majority's views to be heard. The poll found other troubling opinions on Biden's 2024 election prospects. Nearly two-thirds of would-be voters, 65%, believe Biden is showing signs that he's too old to be president, while 57% have doubts about his mental fitness, and 61% think he wouldn't make it through a second term. Trump is the current front-runner for the Republican Party's 2024 nomination and is widening his lead over Biden in a hypothetical rematch. The poll found that voters favor the former president over his successor by 47% to 40% margin, up from a 5-point lead last month. If Vice President Kamala Harris becomes the Democratic Party's nominee, Trump's margin is predicted to extend to 50% to 39%. Also, the website of Politico wrote, "It's impossible to talk about American politics in 2023 without talking about trust, or more accurately, about its conspicuous absence from public life." Sure, everyone's seen the charts showing that Americans' trust in government has declined precipitously since the 1960s, but something about the contemporary crisis of trust seems even deeper than that. Today, Americans don't just feel betrayed by the political establishment or the media or economic and cultural elites. They also feel betrayed by each other. National divorce, a term that frames America's current political crises as symptoms of a deeper social breakup, is suddenly a well-worn phrase. Over a quarter of Americans believe that it might soon be necessary to take up arms against their government. It would be a shocking number if not for the violent assault on the Capitol on January 6, 2021.
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.